This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Matthew Ho spent 6 years as a Marine fighting in Iraq. When he left the armed forces, he joined the State Department and hoped to put his experience to good use. In 2009, he was assigned to Afghanistan. He saw the war was a disaster, and he didn't think it was worth the high cost in lives or dollars. He resigned from his job and wrote a scathing letter to the State Department detailing all the ways in which the Afghan war was, in his opinion, failing. Today, Matthew is a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy in Washington, D.C., and the former director of the Afghanistan Study Group. He spoke to the North Carolina Peace Action Program in Raleigh on Monday. The program was called Bring the War Dollars Home, Restore Our Communities. And Matthew Ho joins us now in the studio. Matthew, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank. Happy to be here.
Tell us again, give us some of the details about why you resigned from the State Department.
It had as much to do with Iraq, I guess, as it did Afghanistan. I have been involved with the wars. I've been involved with the wars now every day of my life since late 2002. It got very personal for me with the Iraq war very quickly, even though I was stationed in the Pentagon in March of 2003. The position I was on, I was a member of the Secretary of Navy staff, and I basically became the casualty officer for the Secretary of Navy. So very quickly, I got involved with families of those who were killed in Iraq in 2003. So it became very, very personal for me. What I saw in Afghanistan in 2009 was very similar to what I saw in Iraq. And where I was frustrated with our leadership that was failing to think critically, failing to be intellectually honest, and just not taking their responsibilities seriously in the sense that we have certain narratives that our policies follow. And to go against those narratives is almost impossible. And so in the summer of 2009, where I saw that the Afghan war was something that was not worth the lives of our soldiers, that we weren't there spreading democracy or keeping America safe. After all my experiences being involved in these wars for so long, I just said, if my leadership is not going to be serious about this, if we're going to let American kids die for no good reason, if they're not going to be serious about it, I want no part in it any longer, and I want to just move on with my life.
What are some of those narratives that you talked about?
Well, it's these victory narratives, or these narratives that we are in Afghanistan or we were in Iraq to make life better, that we were there to help spread democracy, that we were there to fight terrorists, with Iraq. Our involvement, our invasion there was based on false pretenses. There was no alignment between Saddam's government and al-Qaeda. There were no weapons of mass destructions. That quickly morphed into we were liberating the Iraqi people. Well, what we did was, sure, we took away Saddam, who was terrible, but we sparked this horribly barbaric and brutal civil war, a civil war that was our making, that we put it in motion. And in Afghanistan was different because the civil war in Afghanistan has been going on since the 70s. But what our narrative in Afghanistan tells the American people, that your sons and daughters are getting killed in Afghanistan, they're getting maimed in Afghanistan, they're coming back with post-traumatic stress or traumatic brain injury, but they're keeping you safe. If we're not there, there's going to be another 9/11. And that's simply not the case.
Well, that was the stronghold of al-Qaeda. That the Taliban is a group that's certainly not a progressive group, one that you'd like to see if you have sort of progressive Western liberal ideals, perhaps moved out of the way so that more progressive ideas and ideologies could prevail in a place like Afghanistan. Isn't that what we're doing? We're keeping the Taliban out of office. The Taliban protected al-Qaeda, al-Qaeda the sworn enemy of the United States.
Sure. What we see in Afghanistan, again, is a civil war that goes back to the 70s. It's a conflict that the important details of the conflict do not involve international terror, do not involve al-Qaeda, do not involve – we are, I like to say, we are secondary characters in the stage play of Afghanistan. The people we put in power in Afghanistan are as bad as the Taliban were. They are it's an incredibly corrupt government. It's an incredibly predatory government. It's not a representative government. I was there for the presidential elections in 2009. The Karzai government stole those elections, saw it with my own eyes. In addition to with those elections in 2009, they were incredibly disenfranchising and marginalizing. What I saw in the south of Afghanistan in 2009 was similar to what I saw in the Sunni regions in Iraq in 2005, where the Sunnis didn't vote. They boycotted the elections because it was not they were not part of them. They were being excluded from them. The southern and eastern Pashtuns in Afghanistan, the same thing occurred. Those elections didn't concern them. They weren't part of the process. Additionally, what happened with those 2009 elections is that that bloc, the Northern Alliance, which was the group of Afghans, non-Pashtuns, so Tajiks, Uzbeks, Hazaras, other Pashtuns as well, who fought against the Taliban, they're the ones we put in power after 2001. Well, in the 2009 elections and then in the parliamentary elections of 2010 in Afghanistan, both those elections were stolen. So what happened was you had elements of the Northern Alliance who took part in those elections who were then, because the elections were stolen, were then demarginalized and disenfranchised themselves. So what you've seen by fostering and supporting these sham elections to keep Karzai in power, we've actually weakened the Karzai government because we've fragmented and in some ways disenfranchised what was part of his camp before. So, but, you know, getting back to this idea of narratives, it's very complex. I can tell you the man who brought bin Laden to Afghanistan, a man named Abdul Saif, the terrorist group in the Philippines, Abu Saif is named after him. The man who brought bin Laden to Afghanistan, and this is documented in the 9/11 Commission report, was Abdul Saif. Last year, Abdul Saif was the man that Karzai wanted to be the head of parliament. So it's a very convoluted, complicated, and the reality is that most of the guys, most of the men that are fighting us in Afghanistan are fighting us, and this is the vast majority, over 99%, are fighting us because they resent occupation, because they are resentful of a corrupt and predatory and unrepresented government, or because there's tribal, clan, familial issues. Our troops in Afghanistan are stuck in the midst of Hatfield versus McCoy type stuff, things that don't concern us. The groups that are fighting in Afghanistan don't even understand why they're fighting because the blood feud happened so long ago.
So you've got these blood feuds going on, the fact that there's a U.S. intervention. Nobody wants foreign troops on there. Nobody. Yeah. Nobody in the world wants foreign troops on their soil, so you try to reject them. You say the narrative is, well, these are the terrorists, and this is it. Yeah. If we let them go any further, they'll start to open camps, and pretty soon they'll be blowing up more of our buildings. But when you noticed all of this and began to observe, as you say, you observed the elections, you saw the corruption firsthand, did you go to people at the State Department? What happened when you shared your observations?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my reporting was, you know, and one of the things why I went there, you know, and I certainly did as much studying as I could, and I had colleagues and friends who had been in Afghanistan. So I had an idea that, look, this is a conflict that predates us, that we're in the midst of a civil war, that a lot of the insurgency is localized, that they're concerned with legitimate local grievances that may have issues to do in the east with the timber trade and the fact that our troops are in the midst of basically a tax dispute. You know, other things have to do with drugs or blood feuds or just the fact that, you know, the police chief in this district is someone that your family has always been against. So now, there are all these local issues and things that our troops are in the middle. But, you know, so when I went there with the understanding that we were going to end the conflict, that there may have been an escalation of the conflict initially by President Obama, but the idea was that it made no sense to be in the midst of this conflict. Al-Qaeda's who we were concerned about, the stability of Pakistan, which should be our priority, and that the Afghan conflict was something that we need to find an end to and help to find that end. And, you know, I remember reading an article an interview of General David Petraeus in either September or October of 2008 in the New York Times when he became head of Central Command. And he says these things. He says, you know, we can't kill our way out of insurgency. We're going to have to negotiate with these guys. You know, there's probably we don't have to paraphrase him, we don't really have a dog in the fight in Afghanistan. You know, it really doesn't concern our national interests. So I went there with that assumption that this is what we were going to do. And the reality was that we were going to escalate the conflict and get a win. But all my reporting, you know, I mean, you do, you send your reports up. If I knew Frank, I'd be here a couple of years ago. I would have, brought home copies of my emails and my notes and things, but I didn't think I'd still be here. But no, I mean, what happened was is eventually when you start contradicting the narrative enough times, you're then reprimanding. You're then told, hey, you're overly negative. You're then told you need to, reconsider how you're phrasing things. You know, when I sent to the embassy that the elections in 2009 were basically a posthume boycott, I had that kicked back at me and said, look, that's not our narrative. That's not our line. Mm. That's not what happened.
This is The State of Things, and we're talking today with Matthew Ho, senior fellow at the Center for International Policy in Washington, D.C., former director of the Afghan Study Group. He resigned from the State Department in 2009 in protest of the handling of the Afghan war. Our conversation with Matthew Ho continues on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Today, talking with Matthew Ho, senior fellow at the Center for International Policy in Washington, D.C., and the former director of the Afghan Study Group. He resigned from the State Department in 2009 in protest against the handling of the war in Afghanistan. I spoke with him earlier this week when he gave a talk sponsored by North Carolina Peace Action. And I asked him about the resistance that he got to his reports about the situation in Afghanistan.
You shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say that because Ambassador Eikenberry and Ambassador Holbrooke agreed with me. I mean, and there are folks within the administration that agree with me. And certainly what I said was not unique or new. Guys have been saying, men and women have been saying this since we first went to Afghanistan in 2001. So nothing I said was unique. But no, you have people that want to win. You have people that want, for career reasons, for personal reasons, for issues of legacy. You have a grouping within the Department of Defense that sees themselves as, and supporters outside, civilian supporters outside, that see themselves as warrior scholars, and that they are the leaders of this new generation of warfare, and this is their chance to have their stamp on history. And that's really, I mean, it's something that exists. It's really tough to go up against. And when your boss says, this is what we're going for, this is our narrative. And again, you're exactly right, Frank, about the politics of it is, yeah, I mean, the Obama administration wanted to win. They wanted to prove that a Democratic president could be a better commander-in-chief than a Republican president. And I think that had a lot to do influencing the Obama administration's decisions in 2009.
We are winding things down in Afghanistan. What impact do you think that'll have? We're going to get out, and what's it going to look like when we're gone?
Well, you know, first, one of the problems we're having right now is trying to get people to talk about Afghanistan, trying to engage members of Congress on Afghanistan. They come right back at you with, hey, the war's ending, no need to talk. The reality is the war is not ending. We believe that we will transition out of combat operations in 2013, that 2014 will be an end date for American forces if President Obama stays in office, if we have a President Romney or a President Santorum or President Gingrich. That may not be the case. But if the present policy stays and if we do continue with the troop withdrawals, without any change of policy, without shifting from being a belligerent in the conflict to being a mediator, what's going to happen is that we're going to suffer, the American United States is going to suffer several thousand more dead and wounded. We're going to spend a couple hundred billion dollars more, and we're going to leave Afghanistan in a complete mess. And so that's why the argument holds water. If that's what's going to happen in 2014, then just get out right now. And I don't see any purpose or any value in American military involvement in its present form in Afghanistan. I see value in shifting from a role of being a belligerent, from taking part in one side in the civil war. And actually, the civil war is multi-sided and multi-layered. So, you know, taking various parts in it, to being of a mediator, and trying to, with the leverage we have now. And this is one of the problems we had with our current policy is that, if we had begun negotiations in earnest in 2009, we still held this card of escalation. We still held uncertainty with what we were going to do. Now that most people understand that it's politically unsustainable for the Americans to stay in Afghanistan in any, you know, at the level we are now for more than a couple more years, well, our leverage is slipping. So the leverage we had with 100,000 troops there spending $100 billion a year, if we don't act on that now, then certainly we're going to have much less leverage when we're down to 25,000 troops and only spending $25 billion.
Our leverage may be slipping, but our credibility has to be lost. Do you really think the U.S. could ever play a role as mediator given its involvement to date?
Frank, I wish we had a time machine, right? It's very difficult. Our escalation of the war has done a number of things. It has weakened the Karzai government. It has strengthened the Taliban. But while it has strengthened the Taliban by basically our escalation of the war has pushed more people to support the insurgency, it's widened the war. But as the insurgency is larger than it was 2 years ago, it's also not as unified. I mean, there's an umbrella that grows across the entire insurgency that unifies it with the presence of foreign troops, the corrupt Karzai government, ethnic tensions, regional tensions, etc. But what has happened by our escalation is that the Taliban leadership, whatever control they had 2 years ago over an organization that was not monolithic in any way, that they had limited control to begin with, they have even less control. And so you've got this larger insurgency that has less leadership towards it, less control. So that makes the prospects of negotiation much more difficult. The other thing we've done, too, is that there were pragmatists within the insurgency who were willing to negotiate, who understood that, you know, when I was there, you would have these meetings and you know, you bring the governor out, you go to a village and the Afghan men would show up, and certainly the insurgency would be there. The Taliban would be there and they would speak to you, or at least the representatives would. And they'd say, look, we're tired. You know, we've been fighting for 30 plus years, but we're not going to surrender. And then you look around and the guys you're with, the Afghan general you're with and the Afghan police chief or Afghan intelligence chief or the governor are not from those areas. These are the same guys representing the same ethnicities that have been fighting the Pashtuns for however long. So, yeah, you're standing there. And the same thing happened to me in Iraq, where I'd be standing in a Sunni area with a Shia general, you know, telling that the local Sunnis that, no, it's OK. This guy's going to take care of you. You know, what we do as Americans is we show up, and because, you know, we've got a long way to go in the United States, but for the most part, compared to other parts of the world, our institutions are post-racial, post-tribal. You show up in Afghanistan because the United States Army is a post-racial, post-tribal institution. We somehow think that by incorporating the best practices of the U.S. Army, the Afghan Army is going to become post-racial and post-tribal. It's not the case, or post-regional, or whatever you want to have it. So there were pragmatists within the Taliban that were willing to negotiate. They sent out feelers all throughout in 2008, 2009 through 2010. We ignored them because we wanted to win. And now what has happened is that those pragmatists have been they've been minimalized. The hardliners,
well, they take a fair risk in even showing up at that meeting.
Well, but the other thing too is the hardliners won the argument within the Taliban, right? So they're the ones saying, don't negotiate with the Americans, don't negotiate with it's a very religious movement, God is on our side.
Yeah.
And what happened was, yeah, they didn't negotiate, or we didn't. I firmly believe that the United States government failed to allow negotiations to happen. But you know, they survived our surge. They took the best thing the American military could throw at them, and they survived. And now it's not tenable for the Americans to stay. They know the Americans are going to be leaving. So why negotiate now?
So that leaves the other question. We're talking now about the plausibility of the U.S. coming away with any kind of victory. That moment has passed. The United States, the best they can do now is just get out and let it continue to dissolve. Yeah. But the real question is whether or not we're safe. Another question, that's a real question. Another question is whether or not we're truly safer. Remember, the NSA and CIA several years ago both issued reports saying that because of involvement in Iraq, because of involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan, we are now less safe than we were. And the whole point was to be more safe.
Yeah.
What about today? Have we at least secured areas? Are we now safer from terrorism than we were back in the day when we invaded Afghanistan?
Absolutely not. I concur with that. You know, the greatest recruiting tool for al-Qaeda wasn't the 9/11 attacks. It was our invasion of Iraq and Abu Ghraib. I think the threat, you know, if I list what threats our country faces in the future, the threat of a revenge attack is very high, coming from any number of places, not just Iraq or Afghanistan, but Yemen or Somalia, Pakistan, where somebody's family member was killed and they are now going to take revenge on the United States. The notion that somehow we're going to have 100,000 ground troops in Afghanistan is going to make us safer when al-Qaeda is an organization that at most is a couple thousand people spread worldwide. When you see their operations that are successful, that they carry out, a lot of times they're conducted out of urban areas. You know, if you look at even the 9/11 attacks, people forget that, you know, we had 9/11 attackers in the United States 18 months prior to those attacks. If you look at the charge sheet that the Department of Justice had against Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, you know, the list of places that planning and preparation took place for the 9/11 attacks is as long as my arm. I mean, Malaysia, Spain, Germany, Pakistan, the UAE, I mean, et cetera. And you can always make the very, you know, it's crass, but it's true. What were the most important safe havens for the al-Qaeda terror, for the 9/11 hijackers? American flight schools and American martial arts academies. You know what I mean? So this notion that somehow by occupying territory in a geographic space, we're keeping ourselves safe is false. And hey, I'm the first to say al-Qaeda is dangerous because, you know, just a couple suicide bombers who hit a home run with their action can cause not just a great loss of life, but cause economic catastrophe for not just the United States, the whole world. So you got to take them seriously, but we have to take them as they are. A couple thousand people spread around the world, united by an ideology. They don't have a political constituency. You know, the best way to go after these guys is through law enforcement and intelligence work, not by occupying countries and then leading credence to their arguments. You know, that's the biggest of fallacy. That's where our policies over the last decade have really fallen apart, is that we actually made their propaganda pitches, we made their recruitment spiels ring true because we were occupying Muslim lands, we were killing Muslims. This made their al-Qaeda's, you know, al-Qaeda sees themselves as a defensive organization. And by invading Muslim lands, we made those assertions true.
Matthew, thanks so much for talking with us.
Hey, thanks, Frank. I really appreciate it.
Matthew Ho is a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy in Washington, D.C., and former director of the Afghanistan Study Group. He resigned from the State Department in 2009 to protest the war in Afghanistan.